With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of All the Small Games, a podcast all about indie games. My name is Andrew Levins, and joining me today is my good friend and co-host, Jonathan Valenzuela.
Hi, Levins. How you doing?
Very good. Very good. We're in Sydney lockdown. Sydney's first lockdown, proper lockdown since COVID hit, right?
Last year.
We had a lot of close calls, but we never went full lockdown besides the 6 weeks from March. Last year.
We all sat up here looking down at Melbourne going, you poor suckers. And then guess what?
Yeah, I mean, who knows how long this is going to last. Apparently it is a Delta variant, which sounds like a Mega Man villain. It's weird. I'm in the early phase where I'm like, oh, this will be fine. All my gigs got cancelled. I have no income for the next few weeks. So the reality of that hitting me might hit me like a ton of bricks. But at the moment, I'm just like, you know, just trying to be fun and around the kids a lot. It's
good.
They managed to time it with school holidays here. So Archie, my 7-year-old, he is off for 2 weeks. Off school, and that is the exact time of this lockdown. So he's going to spend all of this lockdown kind of here or at the park until my worst nightmare is if they shut the parks as well. That was like the grimmest part of last year for me was every piece of play equipment, like swings and stuff, they would wrap around, the council wrapped them around of the bars and then like taped them so kids could never use them. Everything was like tied off, you couldn't use shit. It was a grim time, and I hope we don't get to that level because I just need to be able to like let the kids loose for a bit, burn off all that energy from being inside all the time. But I have got a few recommendations for games for parents that may be in a similar situation to me, if they want to play some indie video games with their kids. Plus John and I today will be talking about Umurangi Generation.
Yep.
John, you have another game that I've never heard of before.
I have been playing a game called Backbone. If you remember, I talked about playing the prologue a bunch of episodes ago. So
of course, Coccyx.
You know, for what?
Is it Coccyx?
Coccyx.
Damn it! A cock on the mind.
The full game is out, and I've been playing some of that, which is looking forward to discussing it.
I've also played and finished a remake of a very old game called Alex Kidd in Miracle World, a Master System game for the Sega. I used to play it when I was a kid, and it just got re-released with a beautiful new art style, and it's called Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX. So those are all of the games we're going to be talking about on the show. But first, before we get there, John.
Just quick question. What does DX stand for?
Deluxe?
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, surely, right?
Yeah, checks out, I guess.
Write in, everyone. You can email us, allthesmallgames@gmail.com.
Damn xylophone.
Alex Kidd in Miracle World, damn xylophone. Excellent.
Love it.
It's also the abbreviation for diagnosis, right? I think so. Yeah.
In medical terms.
Yeah, that's right. So who knows? But before we get started, yeah, like I mentioned, you can email us allthesmallgames@gmail.com, and you can get in touch with us, ask us any questions you would like answered. We got to just, before we forget about it this week, we got to address someone, because look, every week when we talk about which platforms you can play the indie games on, you know, we'll be like Switch, Xbox, PC, Mac, and then, you know, inevitably have to reluctantly say the word Linux, because many indie games are developed on Linux systems and therefore playable on Linux systems too. Ziggy, one of our listeners, wrote in, and I won't read his entire email. I know he doesn't want to make a big thing about it, but he was just like, why are you so hostile to Linux gamers? And I think, like, okay, from my point of view, it's just I've never met a single person or ever had any experience or knowledge of someone using the Linux system. So it is just this funny L word that we have to say when we talk about platforms. And I imagine the jokes that you make come from there as well, John.
Yeah, pretty much. It's one of those, like, he talked about people using it to make games. And I get, like, Linux systems are just a much more powerful kind of operating system if you really wanted, like, get into the back end of how your computer works and mess around with it and, you know, make it more efficient and change it to be really what you want it to be. Kind of the opposite end of the scale of, like, a Mac, where everything is sort of set for you, super easy to use, super intuitive. I made a joke in our Discord that Linux is the recumbent bicycle of operating systems. which look, Ziggy may have just turned this episode off at that exact point.
Recumbent bicycles don't give you much in the way of choice.
Oh, no, they don't, but it's just like, just use a normal bike. What the hell?
No, I would say Linux systems are just a collection of wheels and bars.
Yeah.
And that's your mode of transport.
You build it how you want. Yeah, look, Ziggy, I have no beef against Linux systems. It's just, you know, it's fun to clown on things. Please,
that we don't understand.
Yeah, of course. That we will never be able to use, quite frankly. So don't take it as like we have any serious sort of hate against Linux.
Yeah, I don't buy into console
guys
wars at
called
all.
Ziggy. On the other hand, what the fuck is that? No, kidding.
Hey man, when I was a teenager, I loved the albums of Ziggy Marley.
Of course,
but yeah, I don't really buy into console wars at all. But it is funny to just kind of, for what no reason, just be like, fucking Linux systems.
Yeah.
Just because I don't know anyone. So Ziggy, congratulations.
Oh, of course.
You're the first person to be on my radar as someone who uses a Linux. And if you are a Linux user, email us in. There are dozens of you, I'm sure. Rise up.
Yes.
And
would love to get a poll of sorts. If you use Linux and you listen to this podcast, email us with subject line, I am a proud Linux user. And
great.
Look, To be honest, I see more games with Linux accessibility than Mac accessibility. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I definitely do. I have to read them out every time and be like, oh, it's not on fucking Mac, but it is on Linux.
It is on.
Yeah.
Next episode, Levin's has a Linux system.
Yeah. I don't even, it's just a PC, right? It's just an operating system, right?
It's a different operating system for PC, essentially.
So not Windows. Yeah. I can understand having a PC and not wanting, you know, you've already got a very customizable piece of hardware, wanting customizable software as well. I can understand that. So
another way I put it in the Discord was, people who use Linux are the kind of people who bring their own pool cue to the pub to play a game,
mm-hmm.
which yep. I think is kind of, you like,
just keep them coming, bro.
I'm not gonna use the pub's stick. I'm gonna bring my own. Clearly.
I'm used to my co-host upsetting our listeners on my other podcast, Hey Fam, but no, we don't actually have genuine beef with Linux.
No,
users.
We don't. Please keep listening to us, Ziggy. We love all our listeners.
Fun fact: 5 out of 10, or so half of the people that leave Hey Fam Discord. And leave a reason as to why in the exit survey. Half of them, it's because Angus has had something to upset them. It's just so
I
great.
Refuse to be this podcast's Angus.
So off that subject, onto the game. So we talk about Umurangi Generation.
Yeah, man, let's do this up the top, because we've both been getting into this one lately, and it's always fun when we can discuss a game we've both been playing.
And look, we always wave the flag. The only time our patriotism comes out is when we talk about Australian games. And this is our first ever game from our proud neighbours, a place where often I think I would rather live, New Zealand. This is a New Zealand game.
Love to do this to you. Wrong.
Really?
If anything, it's the second game, because I have talked about on previous episodes a game called Ashen, which was developed by A44, a New Zealand-based studio.
Well, if you pronounce it the way it's meant to be, Ashen, I would have...
Ashen? Yeah, of course.
I would have remembered.
Sorry. I've been trying to get more information about the developers. The developers are a team called Origame Digital.
Mm-hmm.
I've been searching for them, and I just couldn't find confirmation that it is a New Zealand based studio. But considering just how much, here we go. Umaranga Generation was developed by a Maori developer, Naftali Faulkner. Developed in the game in 10 months. Etc. Worked on community apps with local Aboriginal groups and would dabble in smaller projects. Yes, so it looks like it was actually built by an Indigenous person, which is great because so much of the game is steeped in Indigenous culture.
Yeah, and Umarangi, the word, is a Maori word, right?
It is. Apparently it means the last generation who gets to watch the world die.
Yes, so this is a game, it's a photography game, a first-person photography game in which you start out, you're on a rooftop, and there's a bunch of your friends like sitting around. There are boxes around with like spray cans and boom boxes, and you have to basically walk around this small little zone, and you have a checklist, and you basically have to take photos of everything on the checklist, and if you do it in a certain time frame, you get bonus points because you have to take photos of everything on the checklist and deliver it to someone who wants the photos from you. And it starts off like, it reminded me a bit of like an early Tony Hawk game. You have like this like kind of limited 3D area that you can explore with a checklist of things that you need to do inside it, except instead of skateboarding, you have a camera.
A camera, that's true. So the bounties will be stuff like, take a photo of a British flag, and you sort of have to hunt around the level to discover where a Union Jack is. Like, a lot of it is kind of, it's very much a scavenger hunt.
Mm-hmm.
That is a combination of like finding the thing you need to photograph and then working out how you're going to photograph it, because as you progress further into the game, some of the, they're called photo bounties, some of the bounties you're given will have sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, like rules attached to them, like you need to take it with a telephoto lens or a fisheye lens, or you need to be near the object when you photograph it, that kind of thing.
Or you need to get a photo of 10 of a certain object.
Yes, but all in the same photo, essentially. So it can be like, you can kind of find the thing you're supposed to photograph, and then it becomes like, okay, well, how am I actually going to do this? And it gets really challenging in the later levels, particularly when they're like, you need to use a telephoto lens for this. And obviously, telephoto lens means you're taking up close photos of things that are very far away. So it becomes kind of like, okay, where can I stand in the level that's far away enough that I can actually take a proper photo of the thing I've been asked to photograph? Levin's mentioned the, like, if you finish within a certain amount of time, you can get a bonus. There are a bunch of other bonuses that you can earn. One of them is, in every level, the group of friends that are with you in that first level show up again. So you can get a bonus for taking a photo of them as a group in every level.
Mm-hmm.
Scattered around the levels are bonus film canisters. So again, you've got to like hunt around and find an amount of these bonus film canisters. For every photo you take, you are awarded a monetary amount, depending on kind of like how interesting the photo is. You got to earn above a certain amount. And I think there's maybe one or two other of these bonus bounties that you can get. But you know, to do all of this on top of finishing all your regular photo bounties in 10 minutes can be pretty damn difficult.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I even found like I'm up to the third level, and there's like things on my list that I can see them, and I take the photo, and I'm interpreting the clue wrong because it's not registering as me clicking that off. There's like, so I mean, you've finished the game, right? You're a much better photographer than me. Everyone's always said that, but you've finished that, right?
I as I said on chat earlier, I've technically finished it. I've rolled credits on the game, but after the credits have finished, another level loads that I haven't played before. So I haven't finished that level yet. But if we're going off credits, then yes, I have achieved credits.
You've clocked it.
Yeah. So
I was going to update my my initial description of this game. I think while the developer is Maori, this game was made in Australia.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we go. Yeah, yeah. He lives in Australia.
Yeah, because I think I've read some interviews a while ago, because I played this on PC like last year sometime, and I think they hadn't quite nailed controller integration on the PC version because it was just really clunky to use, which is why when it came out on Switch, I was like, excellent, now I can actually, like, they will have properly built this for the Switch controllers so I can play a lot more easily. Mm-hmm. And apparently, yeah, the developer said it was based on the 2020 bushfires.
Right.
So, like, being in these urban settings with these, like, wild smoke clouds hanging over the top of you and just a really apocalyptic feel that it gave.
Yeah, so you start out, like, chilling on a rooftop and there's no kind of sense that anything is wrong. You're just, like, you know, you're on a rooftop with some cool guys. There's graffiti around and, you know, beautiful mountains around you. And then the next level, you are surrounded by like you're in an army camp basically, and there's tents and soldiers.
That's right. You're on, it's like that kind of top of a skyscraper construction zone sort of thing, but there's lots of UN soldiers and like ammo boxes and encampments and stuff like that.
And so as you progress, it starts telling a story and you realize that there is like a kaiju war happening. Yeah, which rocks. That's a great concept for a story and great way of telling story through gameplay.
Yeah, that's one of the things I love is there's no cutscenes. There's no, like, before a level starts, you have to read a page of text. All the storytelling is done in the levels themselves. So you'll mm-hmm. often find, like, newspapers scattered around, and you can actually, the newspapers will have headlines that you can read, and so it tells, like, the more of these newspapers you read, the more you build this story of, like you said, there is a kaiju war going on. There's newspapers talking about how the UN is abandoning like, I think it's set around Aotearoa. Like, the UN is abandoning Aotearoa. The Prime Minister's gone on holiday,
and that of course is the Maori word for New Zealand.
Yes, the Prime Minister's gone on holiday. The Prime Minister keeps calling for, like, nuclear weapons to be used in the kaiju war and all that kind of stuff. And even you have some levels set in this far more urban setting, and there are, like, posters on the walls, and they're advertising movies and, you know, TV shows and all this kind of stuff. And they're all kind of based around what's going on in the world. I really, really loved that aspect of it, the environmental storytelling.
Yes, absolutely, definitely. Apparently, his biggest influences for the visual style were Neon Genesis Evangelion, Jet Set Radio, and Shin Godzilla, which nice. Are three things that I think are great. And I think, yeah, like the obviously you have the storytelling through the environments you're exploring, but also just the crazy style of this game. Like, I mean, Jet Set Radio is an ultimate example of, like, a style over substance game of the 2000s that has such a massive fan base. And there's nothing really quite like it. And I feel like this is very much, and it's going to be always be in its own zone, just because of, like, there as we saw looking at all the trailers for upcoming game indie games based off of the E3 presentations, there's no shortage of photography games coming out, but nothing looks like it's going to be anything like this one. This is a very unique, cool, and you know, just dripping with personality game that I think if the right people find it, they'll fall in love with it, but if the wrong people play it, they'll just be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, that's fair. I do have one quibble with the game, and that is I don't know if you ran into this, but movement in this game sometimes feels like shit.
Yeah, but I kind of, like, I know this seems like a cop out for me, but I'm used to it, doing that. I think that it works. Like, the like, aesthetically, the sometimes clunky movement works for the setting and the kind of era of games this game seems to evoke.
I just, my counter argument to that is so much of this game is based on trying to find the right camera angle, and often that involves like jumping onto ledges and trying to make your way like to sort of far out bits of the level. And just stuff like, if I'm standing against, like even in that first level, there is a low wall that you need to, that you can, you know, get up to get to like the bit with it. There's a little like skate half pipe there. If you're standing against the wall, you can't jump. Like the geography of the level stops you from being able to jump right up. And I guess it's just little things like just tweaking that slightly. So if I'm standing against something, I can then jump up and make onto it. Because you can actually double jump in this game.
Yeah, right. Because I generally don't like platforming in first person games. So I know this is the problem.
I was very interested about your reaction to this.
I was just like, this is what third person games are like to me. So I don't know. I was just like, this is just part of the they're making.
It's clunky, of course. But yeah, that was a little thing that I was occasionally frustrated. Like I'd be like, God fucking damn it! I'm just trying to climb a staircase. Like, let me just get up there. But like you say, this game is so unique. It's such a such an interesting little artifact. Particularly something that you don't see, which is this combination of Maori culture and sci-fi, essentially. And it's really cool because like you actually go back to some of the levels that you visited earlier.
Right.
So that second level you talked about, the one like, you know, set on top of a building where you run into all these military people. There's a later level where you go back at night and there's actually, the soldiers are actually fighting kaiju.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Around you. So you've got to like make your way around. The overarching story of the game is you are a photo reporter for a newspaper. So that's why you're like going to all these places and taking photos and who you're dropping the photos off to at the end. I never hit the 10-minute limit on any of them.
I did on the first one, but then not on the second.
Right. One thing I also kind of wish for this game is that it had a bit more, because for all of you talking up the top about how I'm a great photographer because I've finished the game and you haven't.
Everyone's talking about it.
I actually, I'm not great at photography. And I often would be a bit confused when it's like, I thought I'd lined up like a really cool shot and I adjust the color levels and everything that I've, you know, all the little adjustments you can make to the photo afterwards. And I submit it and I get like $2.13. And then random photo that I accidentally clicked off is like, wow, $20. I'm just there is no rhyme or reason to this.
All your photos are ranked and you get paid for them.
Yeah.
Did we cover that already? I don't remember.
But it's not you find out how much you've been paid on the spot. It's not, they don't wait till afterwards and be like, S rank photo.
Yeah, that's not some Pokemon Snap bullshit.
Yeah, so I just wish there was a bit more of a robust tutorial. Because there is a tutorial in the game where it runs you through the basics of like, we're rating you on color, composition, and content kind of thing, etc., etc. I wish they'd had a tutorial where it was actually like, take a photo of this. Now take a photo of it in this way. Oh, wow, look, it's more interesting. It's like a bit more of a hands-on tutorial kind of thing.
Or like a rival photographer, and you compare your photos with him at the end, and he's like, oh, I got paid way more than you did, and this is why.
Yeah, just something that gave a bit more of a robust explanation for people who don't unnecessarily great at photos. I'd love to let loose like Dan Bowd or one of the other photographers that we know on this game and be like, all right, you give it a shot, see how you go.
Yeah, you take down the kaiju fire photography.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah, so look, I reckon it's one of those games that I'm really glad has come to Switch. I think it is an experience that everyone should play. Like, I think it's such an interesting game.
Yeah, definitely. It's extremely unique.
That everyone should give it a run.
Yeah. So this came out last year on PC and obviously still available on PC. They even dropped some DLC for it earlier this year or late last year. And then the Switch collection, which came out the start of June, collects both the original game and the DLC in a very tight package. I think this is really cool. If you like very, very, you know, stylistic, cool games, it reminds you a little bit of... what the hell was it called? Where you have like odd jobs that you got to do around town, and it's like a racing game, but then it's mostly about the jobs you got to do around town.
Simpsons Hit and Run?
No. Like, you know, you met with the developer for a drink.
Fuck.
Why can't we remember this guy's game? It's such a good one.
Oh God, no, I know. Desert Child. Yes.
Yeah. That was a very, very stylistic, like unique feeling game with like, you know, limited things you could do and maybe even like restraints in terms of what it could do. But I love both games a lot.
Yeah. Seeing cultural touch points that are fairly unique to our region of the world, contextualized in that kind of sci-fi setting, always love it.
Yeah, me too. Well, John, let's talk about a game that that I was, you know, after playing something that felt very new and cool to me, about a game that I've played many, many times. Just this time, it's in DX. because Alex Kidd in Miracle World was a game that originally came out. Gosh, should I look it up? Do you want to take a guess? I thought, is it maybe 89?
Got to be late 1980s, I reckon.
86 in Japan.
Shit.
And then the rest of the world in 87. From 87. Brazil didn't get it to 1989.
Suck it,
but,
Brazil.
But, yeah, so the Alex Kidd was a game that if you had a Master System, and I didn't, but a lot of my friends did, you would obviously have to buy very expensive games to play with it. But the cool thing about the Master System was if you just shut the lid of the console, then you would automatically get Alex Kidd in Miracle World. It would start up because it was a built-in game. And so this was a game that no matter whose house it was, if they had a Master System, you knew that at some point that weekend, you were going to spend a while trying to beat Alex Kidd in Miracle World. And I never did. I never got past, I think, the second water level. It's a classic, you know, very primitive platformer with very iconic music. John, I'm sure you could just give me the theme song right now.
Nope.
Yeah, great. Glad I asked.
Did not get to have consoles as a child.
Me neither, but I had lots of friends who had them. But it basically has this, I would say, like, it's as catchy as Super Mario World 1-1. It goes like da 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 da, etc. And all Alex Kidd can do is punch. And basically, what made this game kind of unique feeling to other platformers at the time was instead of scrolling from left to right, you eventually did, but the opening level, you have to descend a bunch of cliffs. And the cliffs eventually lead to a water. So in the one level, instead of going left to right, you're going down, and then you hit the water, and then you're swimming from left to right. And so it just felt very different to every other platformer that I was playing, like when I was a kid, when I was an Alex Kidd. So a few years ago, I got extremely drunk. The night before my birthday, we recorded an episode of All the Small Games, and it was, I was having a birthday barbecue the next day. I should have gone to bed because I was going to be cooking the entire next day, but instead, I stayed up drunk and finished for the first time Alex Kidd in Miracle World, which is the close to as it was released port of the 86 game that came out on, it was released on the Switch from like the Sega Ages collection. It was like, you know, $8 or whatever, and it had save states. So that meant, because this game gets like, when you played it on Master System, you have 3 lives, and there are so many things that can kill you. It's one hit and you're dead. There's no health, there's no power-ups. You do get, you can find a ring that can shoot lasers, and there are vehicle power-ups at some points in the game, but they're seldom seen throughout the game. There aren't boss fights for the most part, but you do play rock, paper, scissors against a variety of bosses who are represent a different like rock, paper, or scissors. Like they have a rock head or a paper head or a scissors head. And so you would like memorize and then write down the order of which they would choose rock, paper, or scissors so you could beat them first go when you got to them. But yeah, I reckon the furthest either I got or one of my friends got was like maybe like halfway through the game. And so staying up drunk, using save states, seeing a really annoying enemy, like there are these stupid frogs in the water that slowly float down and up and then release bubbles. And if the bubbles touch you, you're dead. If you've got to sneak beneath him, but he's moving up and down on a really quick axis and you move so goddamn slowly in the water. So you just create a save state, try it, nope, just immediately reload it, etc. So I have finished this game, and it felt great. The final level of that game is so bizarre. You have to like memorize these platforms that you stand on. It's like one platform will have like a fish on it. The other platform will have a sun on it. The other platform will have a moon on it. And if you don't stand on the right number of like, you know, it's like 12 things you need to remember. Somewhere in the game is like a guide to which ones you're meant to stand on when. I didn't get that in my playthrough. So I would just use a save state, keep standing on platforms. And then if I didn't stand on the wrong platform, because if you stand on the wrong platform, it sends an enemy after you, this like angel of death, who features quite prominently in the game. If you stand on a platform with a death's face on it in a regular level, he just shows up and chases after you until you die. It's a great mechanic. But yeah, like I remember like having like in this like weird sequence, pattern sequence, like making a save state, trying my luck, and then doing that like, you know, like 100 times until I got the save state, until I got the pattern right. Stupid, but funny, and I finished it. That's all that's important. Anyway, that is the 80s game and its port. Last year it was announced that Merge Games, a developer from Europe, I believe.
The country of Europe.
We'll figure it out eventually. But Merge Games, who have given us games like, oh man, I don't know if we know any of these. Aragami Shadow Edition, Buildings Have Feelings 2, Cloud
Heard
Punk,
of that one?
DNFC, Dwarfheim, Foreclosed, Haunted Space, Monster Harvest, Streets of Rage 4 is the big one. They did that one. We talked about it last year. Very much enjoyed that game. But in the same way that Streets of Rage 4 was beautifully animated, what the fuck? It's private. Merged Games is privately owned by an Australian guy.
What?
Yeah, crazy.
That's insane. Okay,
very very weird
and mysterious.
Yeah, totally. Someone called Luke Kieran and his wife Joanne. But so yeah, they published it. And so basically they announced a very beautifully animated version of Alex Kidd in Miracle World. And the animation is so good. I don't know. Did you see the trailer for it, John?
I haven't, but I've had a look at some screenshots and it looks like, yeah, really nice.
It's gorgeous. You know, like kind of semi-pixel, semi kind of like, it's like very, very animated pixel animation. It looks so much better than the original, obviously 8-bit, game did. But man, so I was expecting like, you know, oh yeah, cool, a brand new soundtrack, a brand new beautiful visual style for this game that I know almost back to front. And I was like, oh, I wonder what else they, you know, add or change to the game. What else does the DX prefix or postfix, if it comes afterwards?
Sure.
what is
suffix,
DX?
Suffix.
Suffix, sorry. Thank you. I'm a writer. but yeah, they... I was just, you know, I was wondering what other things are they going to change with the game? They did not change anything. So,
oh wow.
This is a very beautiful...
That was so anticlimactic.
I know. So it's a beautiful looking game and a beautiful sounding game. The soundtrack is completely like redone. The backgrounds look beautiful and the enemies, like what was a very, very simple sprite now looks gorgeous and it's like beautifully animated and everything bounces and bops with the music. There's so much going on as you look on the screen, but the gameplay is like, you know, this extremely simple, very difficult platformer. When you first start it, it even has the same... like, you know, 3 lives and then it's game over. So I got game over at some point in the first water world and I was like, oh yeah, shit, trying to get underneath that damn frog. And I was like, damn, how the hell am I going to finish this if there's no save states? And then it came up at my game over and it was like, turn on unlimited lives. So that is the one quality of life improvement they've made to this. But they've also added like some story to it. like, and some of the, and the some of the like the bosses that previously were just rock, scissors, paper, in the second time you fight them, there is like that you do have to actually fight them as well. So there are like a few changes to the game overall, but in terms of like play to play gameplay, it's playing like an unbelievably beautiful looking and beautifully sounding piece of shit 80s game.
Right, okay.
And it's, yeah, it's the it is the ultimate polished turd.
Cool, okay.
Yeah.
Great review.
I have like a lot of nostalgia for it. But if you didn't have nostalgia for this game, there's no way you would enjoy this. It's crazy that so much effort was to put into making this look and sound as good as it does. And they've done an incredible job. Like, what an amazing team. The team are Jenkin Team, Merge Games in conjunction with Jenkin Team. Yeah, and like, I guess, you know, hopefully if this gets enough interest, they'll be able to make a brand new Alex Kidd game with new mechanics, because it is like a fun world and character and like the weird quirks. Like, as dumb as it is to, you know, have rock, paper, scissors as like the main fighting boss mechanic, it made it just such a strange and unique game to me as a kid. The music, like everything about it, there was something about Alex Kidd that I found him as endearing as I did Mario when I was younger. And yeah, they do expand the lore a little bit in this. They make it so you have to collect certain things in the levels before you can progress, which was kind of irritating, to be honest. But it did mean that I had the scroll that told me which of the symbols to step on at the end. They were like, oh, wait, there's one more thing I need to do before. And I was like, okay, I need to go find this thing. But yeah, I'm happy I finished it. Like I said, it was beautiful. And it has that great thing that the Wonder Boy game that launched with the Switch does, where if you hit the right trigger, it'll flick from the original 8-bit version, so the music and the graphics, back to the updated version, like, you know, instantly. So that's cool. It's a great feature to add that. But yeah, in terms of gameplay, I don't know, like if they added like a health system for Alex, or I they didn't change a damn thing and that disappoints me, but I just feel like some quality of life improvement should have been made. Like, by all means, keep the classic version of the game, but the main version you're playing, it's not the classic version, because they have made these weird little changes throughout it. So yeah, it's this very strange package that I would only recommend to people who, like me, have an affinity for this very flawed old game.
Yeah, it's stuff like this is definitely one of those things that's like, how far can you ride nostalgia, essentially?
Like, yeah, totally. If,
you know, this is a game. I had friends with Master Systems. I've definitely played some Alex Kidd when I was a younger man, a much younger man.
Well, they made other Alex Kidd games, and there were nothing like this one, which is so funny to me. Yeah.
But I can't imagine, like, if I went back, I'd be like, oh, that's right. Like, Mario has been so endearing because it did platforming so well. A lot of the imitators were just like, oh, yeah, this is like, I can see what they were going for, but they didn't do it well. And to not update any of that for the modern era is definitely like, this is a museum piece. It's not a game that I would actively seek out to play, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And so you finish the game and you unlock classic mode, which is like a way to play the original game, even though you can flick from to and from it. It kind of puts up the like, you play like the box version of it instead of like the widescreen version. And then there's also a boss rush mode, but I was like, okay, I'll go fight the bosses again. And the first boss, you have to beat him at rock, paper, scissors. I'm like, man, I don't want to do this again. It's like, I accepted it as part of the original game, but like, I'm not like jumping at the bit to play rock, paper, scissors with a dude with a fucking hand for a head again. But yeah, it's funny, like, you know, Alex Kidd, he was the Master System's mascot in a pre-Sonic Sega. So it is strange that he doesn't really exist in the gaming landscape anymore, and I'm not sure if this is going to be the the reminder that everyone needs. Yeah, totally. But look, if you are a big platformer head like I am, and especially if you've played this before and you're interested in playing it again, it is a better experience. Oh, actually, you know what? The hitboxes on some of the villains, and especially some of the hazards that you have to like get past, like, God, his jump arc is so fucking annoying. But it makes more sense when you're doing it in the 8-bit mode, because they've made his character model slightly smaller. So he's a little bit shorter in the up-res, like the beautiful looking version. But it just means there are like moments where like I was like, I swear I didn't get like hit that enemy just then.
Right, but, like, okay.
And yet my character is a ghost version of him is floating up into heaven.
So they've updated the sprite, but not the hitbox.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe this isn't even the definitive way.
You seem really conflicted about this game.
Well, it looks beautiful. I love pixel art, and I love, you know, I love nostalgia. Yeah, they got a lot wrong with this game, but I guess some... Because purists aren't going to love it. I don't know who they were trying to appease. It's weird. I am very conflicted with this game. It's a very difficult one for me to recommend. If it ever shows up on Game Pass, definitely give it a go.
Right.
Don't avoid this game. That's my final take.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Okay. Alex Kidd in Miracle World DX.
Yep.
Maybe I'm trying to think if there's a DX, something DX can stand for that sums up your experience with this game, but I'm coming up blank.
There's like
so
three
far.
Words that start with X, man.
Yeah. That's true.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, so we go from a nostalgic classic to, I guess there's a hint of nostalgia.
Well,
I
gotta tell
game.
You, dude, because like, yeah, the entire time I was playing Alex Kidd, I was like, damn, man, I wish I was playing something with a bit of backbone.
Welcome to the last episode of All the Small Games.
We're gonna be relaunching next week, so next week is All the Small Games DX.
Yeah, so I've been playing this game Backbone. For the last while, Backbone was developed by, I should have this information brought up already, but that would rob me of the opportunity to type on the podcast. So developed by a team called Eggnut, which, not a name I would necessarily, wouldn't call my own company that, but here we are.
I love it. That's great. That's a big, bold decision.
And published by Raw Fury, who are, maybe not Devolver or Annapurna-tier, but I reckon those guys are putting out some goddamn solid games. Mm-hmm. I ride for Raw Fury. So Backbone is a noir detective game set in a world populated by anthropomorphic animals. You play as a raccoon.
I do remember this. Awesome.
Damn straight you do. You play as a raccoon called Howard Lotor, who is a PI. He's a private investigator, a detective who's down on his luck. It starts off with you taking on a case from a woman who thinks her husband is cheating on her and would like you to get some evidence to back this up. So He has no chance of taking her kids away in the custody battle that will ensue during the divorce. So off you go to find out what this husband's been up to. So the prologue is all around like you trying to find out where he's gone. Your sources lead you to a nightclub called The Bite. And you need to finagle your way into
you're,
The
you're
Bite.
You're all good there, man. Something just trying to escape your mouth.
Huh?
Did your lunch just trying to escape your mouth?
Just some gastric distress. So you have to finagle your way into the sort of back rooms of this nightclub. And once you do, you make the shocking discovery of this guy's corpse. And not only is he dead, it appears as if his body is being cut up for, you know, and parceled up and sent out of the nightclub for some reason. So suddenly your original case goes from finding out if a guy is cheating to why the fuck is this nightclub cutting up bodies and shipping them out? So I played this for a little bit and was getting involved in the case and then put it to the side and went in on Umurangi Generation until I finished it. This morning I was like, oh, look, I know I'm recording today. I'll just play another little bit of this game. So this game that started out as like a general sort of detective game, suddenly I'm dealing with this crazy like flesh trading story that's bubbled up that I was like, wow, this is pretty wild. Like 2 minutes before I had to leave the house or I had to go like get my infant daughter out of her bassinet and like get her ready for my wife to feed her before I could leave the house. 2 minutes before that happened, it hit me with the most fucking insane plot twist that I'm just like, I can't wait to get home tonight and kind of get through all my responsibilities so I can jump back into this game and figure out what the fuck is going on precisely. Do spoilers bother you? Like, is this...
I think they might bother our listeners just in case.
Bother our listeners.
We are recommending a game to someone. So
okay, yeah. That's true.
This game is 3 weeks old.
Yeah, I guess true. The primary release is 3 weeks old. It hit me with this thing and I was like, this has changed everything about this game. The story has just gone on this wild kind of thing. So obviously, okay, it has a very, very gripping story. All the like stuff leading up to that is incredibly compelling. It's a great detective story. The art in this game is beautiful. It is like that kind of classic pixel art style you're used to from adventure games, mm-hmm. but just pushed to the nth degree. So when like most of the game revolves around you being in a sort of a scene or an area, it might be like a street in part of the town that you're in that you need to wander around and talk to people and explore with a goal in mind. So as you kind of at the beginning of the game, you pair up with an investigative journalist who is also trying to figure out what all this flesh trade stuff is about, particularly in reference to sort of one of the main mobster in town, which is a polar bear from memory called Clarissa Bloodsworth. So she's trying to bring down Clarissa Bloodsworth. You're just trying to figure out what the hell's going on. So the gameplay mainly revolves around you being in an area, you wandering around, you talking to people. The scenes that you're in are just stunning. Like I think we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, that whole pairing of like classic pixel artwork with really kind of elevated lighting techniques. Mm-hmm. So all of this stuff is like this. It's just absolutely beautiful to look at as you make your way around. It's got that great like... You navigate using the arrow back and forth or the A and D keys, and it's got that great kind of like parallax thing where, you know, you'll be walking next to a building and then there'll be a gap between buildings and you see kind of a vista of the city in the background and just really, really eye-catchingly like great graphics to it.
Yeah, cool.
One drawback for me though is that thus far it's proved to be a very kind of like... gameplay mechanic wise, it's very simplistic. It's just you go to a place, you talk to people, you eventually like get to the end of that conversation, you find out the information you need, you move on to the next thing. I was hoping, because in the prologue there's sort of like, when I played the prologue when it was released as a demo for the game, I managed to like blag my way into the back of the club just by like talking to people and talking to the proprietor of the club and like making up stuff about myself. When I played it through this time, I got kicked out of the club. So I had to figure out an alternate route of entrance to get to where I needed to be, which I managed to do by like, you go and climb up on a newsstand and run across rooftops and then access the club that way. Nowhere else in this game have I found that sort of like, oh, you have a problem to solve. Maybe do it laterally. Like, oh, you failed in this method, but we'll like look around and you'll find a different method. It's all been fairly straightforward from there.
Sure.
Which isn't too big a problem because the story itself has been so compelling that it's kind of fine just letting it wash over me, but I do wish there was a little bit of a challenge still, just in some way, shape, or form, because it's not like your standard point-and-click adventure where you have an inventory and you need to, like, go, oh, okay, well, if I tie this scarf around this length of pipe, I'll have a grappling hook that I can use to do this. Like, it doesn't have puzzles per se, and I just feel like that's one little element of it that's missing. But yes, like I said, for the art and for the story, this is definitely something that should be played. My gut instinct is this will be showing up on Switch eventually, and consoles most likely, because it's definitely, the gameplay is built for that, those kinds of platforms, like running back and forth and just interacting with stuff. It's a natural fit for a controller as well.
Okay, great. That's good to know. Because, the art style and the story is so appealing to me. Yeah. Plus, I'm a furry.
Yep. It kills me that I cannot talk about this like, end of third act twist. It essentially, like, the best I can do without massive spoilering is it goes from a noir detective story to sci-fi horror.
Fantastic.
It's fucking wild. I need to see where this goes now.
Genre pivots are always so much fun.
Yeah. That is Backbone. Look, get into it if you've got a PC. And I am... Levins, you know what? I am proud to say that this game is available on Linux. Ziggy, do me a favor, buddy. Pick up Backbone. Get into it.
Yep, do it. Linux heads.
Any game that comes out on Linux, I'm now making personalized recommendations to Ziggy.
No, he said, please don't make a big thing out of this. So we'll never say your name again, Ziggy. Sorry.
Except for this. Ziggy, play Backbone.
Okay, there you go. If you play Backbone, we'll never make a joke about Linux again, Ziggy.
Yeah. So that's Backbone. Levins, bring us home, man. Bring us home. You got one more game to talk about. You didn't mention the name up the top. You just hinted that it was for families.
So, yeah, man, so we're all stuck at home. Misery. All Sydneysiders are stuck at home. There's no... all our school holiday programming cancelled. So no playing with other kids. No going on fun excursions. No going to movies and parks and visiting relatives. All that kind of stuff had to be put on the back burner. We are stuck inside. And I thought, shit... what games are me and Archie going to play? So I've got Chicory for PS5. We're going to get stuck into that this week. Have you seen any previews for that, John? It's one Finji have published it. The guys who did Night in the Woods and various other beloved indie games. And you're a bell.
Is it an animal with a paintbrush?
Yes, that's right. It's a dog with a paintbrush game.
Got it.
That screams school holidays to me. So I'm looking forward to that. I bought a few games in the recent Switch Indies sale. God, there were so many just classic all-time, all the small games, belters for crazy reduced rates.
It's funny. I've hit the point now with Switch sales that I'm kind of at with Steam sales where everything I want to buy, I've purchased.
Right.
So it just gets harder and harder to find something that I'm like, hell yeah, sale time.
I bought Part-Time UFO, which is a game that wasn't published by Nintendo. It was made and published by the guys that make Kirby.
Okay.
What the hell is that? It's like the little dog is there. HAL Laboratory. It was originally a phone game, but they did a port for Switch. And so that I got that for like $8 or something. I'm really looking forward to playing that. It's like you play like a little UFO with a crane. So it's like based off those like UFO crane games. in mm-hmm. you know, where your skill test is, where you're trying to get a toy, and it looks like, you know, very gorgeous graphic and kind of classic, you know, Nintendo feeling style. So that'll be a fun one to play with the kids too. But just before the lockdown was imposed, on the first evening of school holidays, Archie's best friend, Lexi, and her family came over, and her dad is a big time Nintendo dork as well. So we bond over video games and tech. He got me a cheap TV. He got me some cheap speakers. This is a great relationship for me. And it's one, you know, the kind of the dad friendship that you read about in a book, in the books, and you think one day I'll have a dad friend like that. And I got him. And nice. he brought his Switch. He was like, "Have you ever heard of a game called Boomerang Foo?" And I said, "No, I've never heard of it." He's like, "It's an Australian indie game, and the kids fucking love it." And I said, "Jesus, you better pull that Switch out, fellow dad, put it in my dock, see what happens." And so you can play six players of this game, in which you choose. You can play as a different piece of fruit or food. So you can play as a banana or a watermelon or an anthropomorphic cup of milk, hot sauce bottle, pineapple, I think is one of them, a piece of bacon.
Donut?
And, yeah, there's a donut.
Hell
sure
yeah.
Is, buddy. And you are, so you're an anthropomorphic piece of food with a boomerang. And this is a local multiplayer game a la one of our all-time favorites, John, Duck Game. Except
Hell
instead
yeah.
of a duck with a gun, you are a food with a boomerang. And so...
Was Duck Game like isometric 3D or was it 2D?
2D. 2D, right. Yeah. Duck Game was like 2D jumping through like apartment buildings almost. This is isometric top down, and like you're in the kind of like floating islands and things like that. So you can fall in the water, but the most likely way you're going to meet your death is by being struck by someone's boomerang, because you can press X and you'll throw the boomerang. You can hold X and you can aim the boomerang and then unleash it at the perfect time to take out two or even three of your foes at once, because once you hit them, once, as everyone knows, boomerangs come back. So you can like throw the boomerang and then it can hit someone, and then on the way back take out someone else. Very fun mechanic. You can also just hold the boomerang and use it to slash through your enemies, and it's one strike from a boomerang and you're dead. And basically you can like, so at the moment, like, because we were getting like the Levin's family did not do very well in this clash against Archie's friend. They wiped the floor with us, and so we did a dads versus the kids, so four kids versus two dads team up, and we got our asses handed to us then too, because his kids are just very good at this game. They're very good at boomerangs. So yeah, you can dash, you can slash, and you can throw your boomerang, and then you can collect books, and books give you like upgrades to your boomerang. So you have like an explosive boomerang or an ice boomerang or like a fire boomerang, and so they all do different fun things like that. One of them, you can get an upgrade that just when you stand still, it's like called disguise, and so you'll just turn into like a palm tree or like something that's near you and just blend in with the scenery, wait for someone to come near you, like hopefully they haven't noticed you suddenly disappear, and then strike. Just like a very, very, that's the best upgrade in the game, I think. It is so fun. It's like instantaneous. You might die in the first second, but you know that everyone else is going to die 10 seconds after you, and it'll be like the best out of like, I think there's maybe like 15 notches, and it's the first to like clear all the not, like, you know, first to get 15 wins is the winner.
Okay,
man, I could not recommend this more as like a fun party game. If you are in a family of people that like to play games, or you are not in lockdown and have friends around regularly. Unfortunately, there's no online multiplayer, but locally it is so much fun. You can do teams. I would even recommend this as a single player game, because you can just play against a bunch of bots, and you can make the bots of varying intelligence. They're pretty good at the game, those bots. and it's a great way to learn, so you can beat those damn kids when they come over again once lockdown is over. But yeah, it was developed and published by a Sydney-based indie team called Cranky Watermelon. This is their first and only game. But it has art direction from Massive Monster. And I think they made that, what was that cool platformer, Adventure Pals?
Yeah.
I think that's them. Yeah.
I was going to say that definitely rings a bell.
Adventure Pals and Never Give Up. That was Massive Monster.
Yeah, I was getting it. Like, I've seen screenshots of Boomerang Fu, and the character design definitely reminds me of the Adventure Pals.
Anyway, so just to really just tell you what an impact this has made on my son. This morning, it's like all he talks about. We started playing it on Saturday. I bought it straight away. He came into our room and was like, "Can I play Boomerang Fu now?" And like, he sucks at this game. Like, don't ever let. Sorry, Archie, but if you ever hear this, but you are awful at this game. But he is so determined to get better at it. It is like a very fast paced action game, but it's so colorful and vibrant. Even though, like, when you take down like one of the other fruits, like, they get full on sliced in half, X's on their eyes. If it's milk, like, the milk spills out like blood. Very great animation. Wow. But he's obsessed with it to the point where this morning he'd drawn all the characters and then also invented new characters, because it's such a great thing. You just come up with like a food that isn't in the game yet, put eyes and a boomerang on them, and voila, they're in the game now. And he's like inventing different boomerangs that could be in the game, like a teleporting boomerang. Don't know what that would do, but he's invented it. He is obsessed with this game, and I just saw that on Cranky Watermelon's Etsy, they have badges and pins and mugs, and I might have to invest in some indie game merch, something that there isn't enough of, quite frankly. But look, if you are looking for an awesome party game, we've sung the praises of, like, we've spoken about it. It's a legendary weekend in all the small games lore. John's Bucks weekend, just before he got married, maybe 10 of us, 10 of John's best friends, we went up the coast. I don't know where we went. We went in the country or something, got a house, and I brought my PS4 and my Switch, and we just played, like, party games with our friends for, like, hours. And the biggest hits were Duck Game and...
Nidhogg 2.
God, what a game. And I would put this in that same echelon of like unbelievably fun, addictive party games that are so easy to understand, hard to master, but you die and you just want to get back in there and have another go. I would love to see some like single player, like a story mode or like levels or something, challenge mode added to this game in the future. But as a party game, it is very, very solid, and I recommend it very highly. Boomerang Fu by Cranky Watermelon came out last August. It's on Switch, Xbox, and Steam at this point. So if you have any of those to play on, definitely give this one a shot. I love it. And Archie loves it. He's like, you know, he's going to be writing fanfic for Boomerang Fu by the end of the year for sure.
I want to hear him going pro.
Yeah, man, that's the dream, right? Boomerang Fu
by trade. It's Boomerang Fu circuit.
Yeah, he just starts walking around with a boomerang in his pocket all the time. What's that for? Visualizing.
Well, sweet. That is another episode of All the Small Games in the Bag. Levins, it was great to chat with you about
this. Absolute pleasure. Anyone would think that I've only had my family to talk to for the last few days. That's why our episode went so long. But
oh, boy.
It's been great. Enjoying your lockdown? What's it like? Is it good having all this extra time with your little gal?
Look, that's the thing, like an eight-week-old baby, that's basically lockdown in and of itself.
True.
Like,
yeah.
We weren't roaming very far prior to the lockdown. It kind of sucks that we can't have friends over and that kind of stuff, because there's still people that need to meet young Olive, and we had plans in place for this Saturday, and then suddenly they brought the lockdown crashing down. That kind of sucked, but I mean, look, I was not really going out to clubs or restaurants that much beforehand, so it's kind of...
Is that a dig at me, who only does those things?
Suck it, buddy. Welcome to my life.
Yeah, somehow you get paid for not going to restaurants and nightclubs. I need to figure that out.
It's not much of a big deal, but, you know, it's wonderful having Olive around.
Yeah, unreal.
Baby's farts, my dude.
They are amazing. So funny. They're always funny. Someone needs to make an indie game called Baby Farts.
I want a DJ mixtape that's just like DJ Khaled yelling, "We the best," and then it's just the sound of Olive farting.
Great. Make it happen. That's crowdfunded.
That'd be incredible. Do you know what you're going to plan to play for next week?
Chicory, the aforementioned paintbrush dog game. and what's going to be countless more hours of
boomerang
foo. Maybe I'll be pro next week. It is really fun. I can't wait to get back to it.
Considering you said on this episode that Archie sucks at boomerang foo, I think we need updates for the next few weeks about I'd love it if 3 weeks from now you're like, he still sucks.
Yeah, this is... Oh, no. I hope it gets better.
Yeah, so do I, but...
I've been playing quite pleasant, gentle kind of games with him, or Mario stuff where, it doesn't... I mean, yeah, you can just suck shit at those games, and as long as I finish level, it's fine. But if he doesn't get better, he's just going to die repeatedly. So I think this is actually going to be a big turning point for him. I think he's going to have to force himself to get better at this game. So that's exciting.
This is Archie's get good moment. Yeah. Nice.
I'm just leaving comments all around the house saying get good.
Get good.
Hey, thanks so much for listening, everybody. We hope you are staying safe wherever you are. And if you need as many indie game recommendations as possible, we are the place to go. You can get in touch with us by emailing us allthesmallgames@gmail.com, on Twitter @ All the Small Game, and facebook.com/allthesmallgames. But we also have a Patreon, and if you would like extra episodes, there's two big bonuses there. We did deep dives into two games. One of them is called Bastion, the other is called, John, what the hell was it called again?
The Stanley Parable,
because we have a Game of the Month Club where every month we choose a game. Everyone in the All the Small Games Discord plays it, and then we do a deep dive on it. The current game for this month is going to be a game called VVVVVV, 6 V's by Terry Kavanagh. It's available on almost every platform. You can apparently even play it if you have the recently released Nintendo Switch game dev, kind of my first game dev kit, Game Builder Garage. Someone has recreated the entire game in that. So I've almost finished my replay of VVVVV, and I think I might try and see what it's like playing it in the Game Builder Garage as well. If you want to play along with us, the easiest thing to do is go to patreon.com/allthesmallgames. $5 a month gets you access to our Discord community and the bonus episodes when we put them up, including our deep dive episodes and a very soon to come other podcast we're going to be doing called All the Other Things, where John and I talk about all the other media we consume in our lives that is not an indie game. So that is patreon.com/allthesmallgames. At least one of us is down a ton of money this month. So if you are feeling generous, maybe you're in a better position than we are, by all means, come and throw a couple bucks our way. You get some great content, and you know that you're supporting Da Boys.
Nice.
And Da Babies. Yeah. More importantly. And Da support, Roof over Da House.
support Archie's journey for becoming a boomerang foo master.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. We really appreciate you. And if you want to tell other people about our podcast, that would be cool too. John, it was an absolute pleasure. I will speak to you offline.
Indeed. I will talk to you then.
Bye.
All right, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.